"Who's there?" cried the captain at his busy desk, hurriedly making out his papers for the customs. "Who's there?" Oh, how that harmless question mangles Jonah. For the instant he almost turns to flee again, but he rallies. "I seek a passage in this ship to Tarshish. How soon sail you, sir?" Thus far the busy captain had not looked up to Jonah, though the man now stands before him. But no sooner does he hear that hollow voice than he darts a scrutinizing glance. "We sail with the next coming tide," at last he slowly answered, still intently eyeing him. "No sooner, sir?"
"Soon enough for any honest man that goes a passenger."
Ha! Jonah, that's another stab. But he swiftly calls away the captain from that scent.
"I'll sail with you," he says. "The passage money, how much is that? I'll pay now."
For it is particularly written, shipmates, as if it were a thing not to be overlooked in this history, that he paid the fare thereof, ere the craft did sail. And taken with the context, this is full of meaning. Now Jonah's captain, shipmates, was one whose discernment detects crime in any, but whose cupidity exposes it only in the penniless. In this world, shipmates, sin that pays its way can travel freely and without a passport, whereas virtue, if a pauper, is stopped at all frontiers. So Jonah's captain prepares to test the length of Jonah's purse ere he judge him openly. He charges him thrice the usual sum, and it's assented to. Then the captain knows that Jonah is a fugitive, but at the same time resolves to help a flight that paves its rear with gold. Yet when Jonah fairly takes out his purse, prudent suspicions still molest the captain. He rings every coin to find a counterfeit. "Not a forger, anyway," he mutters, and Jonah is put down for his passage. "Point out my stateroom, sir," says Jonah now. "I'm travel-weary. I need sleep."
"Thou look'st like it," said the captain. "There's thy room."
Jonah enters and would lock the door, but the lock contains no key. Hearing him foolishly fumbling there, the captain laughs lowly to himself and mutters something about the doors of convict cells never being allowed to be locked within. All dressed and dusty as he is, Jonah throws himself into his berth and finds the little stateroom ceiling almost resting on his forehead. The air is close, and Jonah gasps. Then, in that contracted hole sunk too beneath the ship's waterline, Jonah feels the heralding presentiment of that stifling hour when the whale shall hold him in the smallest of his bowels' wards. Screwed at its axis against the side, a swinging lamp slightly oscillates in Jonah's room. And the ship, heeling over towards the wharf with the weight of the last bales received, the lamp, flame and all, though in slight motion, still maintains a permanent obliquity with reference to the room. Though, in truth, infallibly straight itself, it but made obvious the false lying levels among which it hung. The lamp alarms and frightens Jonah, as lying in his berth his tormented eyes roll round the place, and this thus far successful fugitive finds no refuge for his restless glance. But that contradiction in the lamp more and more appalls him. The floor, the ceiling, and the side are all awry. "Oh, so my conscience hangs in me," he groans, "straight upward so it burns, but the chambers of my soul are all in crookedness." Like one who after a night of drunken revelry hies to his bed, still reeling, but with conscience yet pricking him, as the plungings of the Roman racehorse but so much the more strike his steel tags into him, as one who in that miserable plight still turns and turns in giddy anguish, praying God for annihilation until the fit be past, and at last amid the whirl of woe he feels, a deep stupor steals over him, as over the man who bleeds to death, for conscience is the wound, and there's not to staunch it. So, after sore wrestlings in his berth, Jonah's prodigy of ponderous misery drags him drowning down to sleep.